The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, James Anderson, and we are brought to you by Prize Picks. Use the promo code ROTOPOD for 100% deposit match on Prize Picks. My guest today is Chris Welsh. You've heard him on the show many times. I've been on his show many times. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about the next great prospects in minor league baseball. This is going to be part rookie league preview and part full season check-in on the hitters who are in the same class as the rookie level guys. So we will only be discussing hitting prospects who are 18 years old or younger on this episode. So definitely a dynasty episode for you folks. Chris, this is I kind of went with 18 here because to me, the guys who are 19, they're age appropriate for single A right now. Some of those guys are even at high A or double A. And so I thought it'd be kind of fun to just talk about all these guys who are basically in one class or the class before that, the 2024 J15 class, 2023 J15 class, essentially, and then last year's draftees. And all these guys are basically the same age. So some of them are at, you know, double A, high A, single A. Some of them are going to open in rookie leagues, but they're all making up two classes. So I thought it'd be good to kind of lump all these guys in together.
Yeah, we were having an interesting talk off air too, where it's like, what's interesting about some of these names are, you know, like once you hit that 19, it's not necessarily an age thing, but for a lot of like the like Dominican or like high school guys that they'll end up getting to complex, they have a little bit of short season play. And then you get into that next full season. By the time that guy is like hit 19 years old, we've had the press of talking about them. They've had a little bit of rookie ball and then their first full season, you're almost like, all right, is this guy in the majors yet? And I feel like we get that sometimes in questions. Like it to this day, I feel like I still see questions where like you or I or whoever, Eric Cross, they'll tweet about a prospect and this guy will be like complex level. And the first comment will be like, could we possibly see them this year? And a lot of that comes from that elongated conversation where we've talked about them, we built them up. We're like, hey, there's a lot of potential. You know, maybe there's a little first year player. And then all of a sudden, you know, over this year and a half of talk to maybe a few at bats to an off season and then into starting full season, people have just almost moved on from that excitement level. So really what it was getting at is like these, a 19 year old plus player, even in A ball, can kind of lose some of that stigma because everybody knows, everybody has been talking about them. You had a really great example of one I was going to bring up thinking maybe we were going to do 19 and under. And that was Lazaro Montes, who, now he's kind of off to another great start, high walks, not crazy strikeouts, good batting average. The power's kind of always on display. He's very, and maybe this is a cheap comp, it's very Eloy Jimenez like, even when Eloy was in the lower levels, kind of a bigger lower half thick guy. Where will he advance to? But that's a dude we've been talking about for what, like 2 years, James? Like we've been talking about him forever. And even though he's only an A ball and we should kind of get excited about it, it's like, we've just had so much buildup and they're, you know, mid 19 years old. We're not even thinking about Basayo and Lazaro Montes. I mean, we are, but not in the next great prospect range because we have built them up so much. So I like the topic that you're going to have with the 18 and under, because these are those next stars to jump in past Lazaro and a few of those others.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think like Lazaro is kind of, he's already kind of made it sort of as sort of a very clear, ish, you know, yeah, one of the great young prospects and you know, conversely, you got a guy like Roderick Arias from the same class as Montas. And I would hold Arias's issues at single A against him this year, because he is 19 and 7 months, almost 19 and 8 months. So a lot of the guys we're going to talk about are struggling, but they're multiple years younger than a guy like Arias, and they're playing at the same level. So that's when there's a bit more nuance in terms of the evaluation. So, yeah. You know, let's actually just head right there. Ethan Salas and Sebastian Walcott, the only hitters on my top 400 who are 18 and under playing at the high A level. Ethan Salas, I think, is that, you know, they're kind of opposites, because Salas is just uber advanced, you know, the type of guy that defensively could probably play in the majors today. And then on the flip side, you got Sebastian Walcott, who's just all tools. And, you know, we don't know if he's going to be able to put it all together. Obviously, like I said, both these guys have an OPS under 650, but they're also ridiculously young for the high A level. So what's kind of the temperature check for you right now on Ethan Salas and Sebastian Walcott?
Yeah, start with Walcott for a second. I'm not sure I understood that one. Like, I don't think he's the type of prospect that you would have done this, because you said he's all tools and no refinement. And that's a lot of what I saw in the complex league, because, you know, he jumped or he was actually out in spring training a little bit last year. And then he was in the Dominican Summer League for a bit, where he wasn't actually, like, I don't think, that good. And then they jumped him over stateside to come here and play in the complex league, where I saw a ton of him. And exactly what you would expect was on display. Bad pitching, you throw him a fastball, he's going to crush it 430 pull side. But also, if you know, you throw secondaries, I saw him just eat pitches left and right, just swing through stuff. Like, there's a lot of swing and miss in his game, but the tools are extremely loud. So sometimes with those guys where, you know, people focus, are like, how could you rank a guy with a 35% strikeout rate that high? And it's like, well, you know, they're already 6'4". You can see the body projection. They run like the wind. They've got 400 plus, you know, easy 55, 60 raw power. Like, you already see those things. So we have to refine it. So I don't understand where the refinement was. Like, let's give him a really difficult assignment for his age to level. So the Walcott one has really baffled me. To his credit, he's got a high walk rate. It's over 12%. That's great. But it's a worse strikeout rate than what it was last year at the same level. His batting average, again, is under 200, and he's not really running extremely low BABIPs. So I hate that one, because I do think this is a great tooled out prospect that honestly might have to be sent down. I don't know if you saw, and I know there's injury and development stuff with this, but Brock Porter is coming down to the complex league and some of his early starts. So he's going to be down in the complex league, might be injury based as well. But like, I feel like the Rangers have done this a little bit. So and I'd let you comment on Walcott, but the Walcott one was pretty baffling to me.
Yeah, I still haven't really heard a good reason for why he was sent to high A. And like, the only thing I could really think of is that there was something to do with Hickory versus down east, where maybe the field staff they have at Hickory they thought would work better with Walcott, or the players on that roster, they wanted to keep him with those guys or something. I really don't understand why he's there. For baseball reasons, it just doesn't make any sense. But
no,
like, what are you supposed to do with him on a set of prospect rankings where you like the raw tools, you don't think he should be at the level he's at, and he's predictably performing quite poorly at the level he's at? So, like, do you hold it against him? Do you just kind of say that the team messed up? Do you think the team knew what they were doing and they wanted to test him because they wanted him to show him that he had these things to work on? Like, how do you go about valuing him when you do your next prospect rankings?
I kind of have a play. It's interesting you say all that too, because this could be done in different organizations and stuff, but something I have noticed a lot in talking to a lot of prospects as well, I think we all just have this envision when we think about prospects. We're like, okay, cool. You know, this guy's going to do this and he's going to learn this stuff. And then they're going to be like, all right, buddy, here's the things you work on, go here and you do that. And there's so much not like that. Like, I've mentioned this tons of times, but remember a couple of years ago in the AFL when I did my horrible Curtis Mead interview, and I asked him, I was like, oh, hey, you know, what did the Rays talk with you and da 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 in the offseason after playing in Australia? And he was like, nothing. Like, they didn't have him have this trajectory of like, okay, we want you to check these boxes, and hey, we really want you to start working on, you know, pulling more fly ball. There was nothing in that regard. So sometimes this is like spring training is the time where they do these mini camps in between. That's where it's like, these are the things we're going to work on. And then when you get in season, it's just to the wolves. And it's like, okay, now take these things we've taught you and go. So I'm confused on what are the things that we learned in spring training that was going to push that aggressive assignment. So I kind of think there's a minor league aspect as far as like hands-on and how they mature these players that you almost can kind of take away, because I think players more than ever can make these bigger jumps once given the opportunity. So I say all of that to say that for me, high end, like high tooled out talented players that I've had like high, you know, ranks on, I don't want to hold some of this against them, because I still feel like, you know, when you see him make like big contact, you see those big plays. I have this like, I feel like to me, 75 to 100 on my prospect rank list will sometimes be this crossroad of guys that have been pushed down, but still have the talent that I don't want to give up on, meeting the players that are waiting to take the next big step for me to pull the trigger and take the next big step on ranking that player and, you know, making them go through the roof. So that I think that 75 to 100 for uber talented players in my mind was kind of where that is. Maybe it's outside the top 50 and it takes a little bit of time. That's what I did with George Valera. Big L on me, because it has not worked at all. So Valera ends up, you know, going outside the top 100. I still do believe he's talented. I think some people would have him outside the 300 or whatever, but I think that's going to click in. So 75 to 100 for a guy like Walcott, who is probably being overpressed to his level, has crazy raw tools. It's still early because he's still young enough. That's, I think, my kind of happy spot for not being ballistic, where we could justifiably say from an upside perspective, Walcott could easily be a top 30 guy. But you can't strike out 33% of the time and hit 190 and be a top 25 or 50 guy, arguably a top 100 guy. But I think the tools are still there with Walcott.
Yeah, I think that's – and the other – you know, there's going to be so many pop-up prospects on this next update that I'm going to do, but there's going to be so many graduations. So it'll probably even out roughly kind of in terms of the attrition in the top 100 or so.
Do you think there's going to be a lot of pop-up inside the top 100 outside of graduations? Like besides guys that are just vault up because of graduations, do you anticipate?
I think you know, there's
always
one to two guys that might pop up that high. You know, like Wichrowski with the Brewers, is one, that I could see debuting, kind of in that borderline top 100 range. Jarrell, Perez with the Dodgers. Another
guy. Jarrell in the top 100 already?
I think he's kind of in that borderline top 100 range.
I struggle with him. I was talking with someone about him because I saw a ton of him in Complex League. And if you really look back, it was like a super talented team, that Dodgers. It actually felt very 3 or 4 years ago. I know we're going to talk about it later, but like, you know, the Abrams and Carroll and Luciano year of the AFL, the ACL, the Complex League this year with the Dodgers, there was just so much talent that was just churning in and out of there. And Jarrell Perez was one of those players that he kind of just sat in the wings, yet I think he led Complex League in homers. He didn't show off some of the bat to ball skills that you're seeing now. And now it's like, oh my God, he's walking a ton. He's not striking out a ton. I don't think his body is as projectable, but the dude can absolutely smash the ball. And he did it on a team of like a lot of talented, or, you know, maybe overrated, and like Sam Munoz and Wilman Diaz and stuff like that. But I mean, the Dodgers do that. The Dodgers, they just churn out these guys that, all whether the level is going to be elite or not, like they seem more polished. They do a really good job as far as like their international scouting and stuff. And they let him marinate. You know, that's another thing. Like, look at Walcott. Like Walcott, they just like, all right, you know, DSL complex A ball. And then now this year you go to high A, and a guy like Jarrell Perez, they just said, we're going to, for the most part, keep you here in complex for the year, extended complex, do your little thing at the end once complex ends, and then just do that right progression. Maybe that's like an organizational thing as far as developing talent. Dodgers versus Rangers, like a pretty pretty stark difference.
And then Ethan Salas, a guy that I know you have been extremely high on, and you know, him going to high A was not a surprise at all. I think that was kind of the most obvious place for him to go based
in a positive way. In a positive way, not like the Walcott, because he could have justifiably been a double A, but that was the right place to put him.
Yeah, I think this was definitely the right assignment for Salas. What do you make of how he's done? 18 games, zero homers. He's got zero homers in 36 games above single A. But again, Ethan Salas is 17 years old and 11 months. You know, we were just talking about Sebastian Walcott. Walcott's older than Salas. So, you know, we got a 17-year-old catcher at high A. I would say he's sort of holding his own, but not doing anything that impressive. He's basically just walking a lot. So what do you do anything with Salas? Does he just like leave him exactly where he was preseason?
No, I mean, I think this he's like the classic prospect ranking battle because there's so many things that worked for him. First year player, you know, his bat was coming alive. I mean, legit might have been defensively ready last year. You know, to play in the majors, bat was more advanced. There was so much room for growth as far as like value goes in fantasy. And then you bring him up and you get excited. But then, you know, some of the realities kind of set in as far as like, well, he is a catcher. And then you're seeing the offense kind of take a little toll back. I also am very, it's going to be a very interesting year too, because there's a lot of pressure on a guy like him. Like he has been vaulted into like the guy. I spent a lot of time on the backfields of the Padres during spring training. He has his own cart. Like there's no other guys. And that's because he's wanted. People are trying to find him back there. Like that's not happening with a guy like Jackson Merrill. Jackson Merrill's walk in the backfields. Ethan Salas would get on his own cart and go because there is so many eyes. There's so much attention on him. And, you know, there's a part of that. And like, where does the full focus go at this age? You know, you were thrust into everything last year. He met the call and we're seeing some of those things matter, of course. But what you're seeing is you're seeing like, oh, the bat isn't taking huge big steps. As a matter of fact, you could argue maybe it's like regressing. You know, it's almost 30% strikeout K percentage so far in high A, where last year at high A it was 24% in double A. Batting average is struggling with a really high BABIP, much higher than his average. Like I think Ethan Salas, it's centering itself out. It's finding it, you know, here was the big high, oh, and then the lows coming in, and it's going to find its happy place. I still think the happy place is somebody that hits for a pretty dang good average, 270 plus. I do believe he'll do that. I think there's 20 to 25 homers in there, but I would also say this. I do believe that he is so good defensively at catcher. He's a guy that's not going to come off. It's similar to Adley. Like they're just, you know, they're not going to take him off of that position where a guy like Samuel Basayo, you know, already playing first base, that maybe is something to consider that is a disadvantage unless his bat was so good that a team would then go and put him as a DH, which is not proving itself right now. So you are getting back to that like limited at bats going on. I have brought him down because I went really high on him, but that's also that battle between catchers and prospect value and stuff like that. He's still I think it's hard to argue from a value standpoint in fantasy. He's still not like a top 50 guy at worst. I have him higher than that, but I think that's the realm that he has to sit on. I think he has checked some of the boxes that you need to check. And even I'm talking like excitement and hype. So now we got to see what that next step is. Cause right now I think we're just kind of averaging out. He's pretty mediocre at his level. He's still playing above his level, but it's not anything we're going to write home about, you know, struggling batting average and really high strikeout rates. There are some guys that could end up passing him. Arguably Samuel Basayo could be a player. Maybe that is more valuable simply because of the everyday playing time, the bigger power potential. And, you know, he hasn't been a big strikeout guy. So you could argue that Basayo is a better fantasy asset than Ethan Salas, even though Ethan Salas is arguably a much bigger name. It's not a great time to sell him, but as Salas moves up and up, you know, that might start to become more of a thing that you'd want to do.
Yeah, I mean, Basayo, depending on, you know, who you're talking to, I feel like he is already as big a name as Salas in dynasty circles, just because of the production. I guess if you wanted to make some excuses or one excuse for Salas, he is playing in the Midwest League. It's definitely not cold in Fort Wayne these days, but there were some days in the 40s and the 50s earlier in April. And, you know, typically guys in the Midwest League April will be the least productive month. So I'm interested to see how he does between now and my next update, which will be in about 4 weeks. I could see
where him. Where do you have him?
Oh, where do I have him?
Like, is he a top 30 prospect to you?
I had him at 40 coming into the year.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, that's, I think even like if you're skeptic or you're all in, like he's in the top 50 range. And I don't think, like, I moved him down off of kind of the start, but that was only because we were like, I was really high on Salas and there's a name value aspect to him. But even like, I'm not adjusting him outside of a top 50. You could warrant the production if you only bought into the production. But I agree with what you're saying. Like, reading everything into April and completely decimating player values with cold weather and stuff, like that's too dramatic. I think you can make some adjustments, but like, I wouldn't want to go too crazy with it. And I didn't, and I don't, it doesn't, I doubt you are going to go too crazy with it either, at least off of April.
No, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens the rest of the way. You know, he could even be higher than 40 if he really,
what's he got to do? What's he got to do? Like, we got to get the, you got to hit 300 in May and get a couple bombs and drop the strikeout rate to like 20%. Does that get you higher?
I think just, yeah, I think, you know, maybe hitting a two or three bombs, dropping the strikeout rate to 24%, something like that. I'd feel really good about that.
I'm with that. Yeah, I'm with that.
How about Nelson Rada of the Angels? You know, this is the only under 19 hitter at double A, if I'm not mistaken. And discussed this with Sam Dykstra a few weeks ago, just kind of classic Angels jumping their hitting prospects over Tri-City. But I mean, we are talking about a 18-year-old with very minimal game power at this stage, playing against double A pitchers who really know what they're doing. You know, relative to pitchers at single A, especially, but high A as well. He's hitting .213. Rada is. He's got the 9 steals in 20 games, so that's great. But really hitting for basically no power right now.
Literally,
What do you do with Rada?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tough because just because he's in double A, it's not telling. It's just, the Angels, they clearly just don't know what they're doing, or they do really know what they're doing and it just doesn't matter. Like, I was talking with someone the other day about Caden Dana, and it's like Caden Dana at double A is as good as being maybe the next pitcher that could come up in all of baseball. Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Totally,
like,
totally.
He's 20 years old at double A. It doesn't matter with how the Angels work this stuff. They're just skipping and going. He might be up tomorrow. So Rada in double A, to me, doesn't first off set off a radar because it's the Angels. And, you know, the only 18-year-old in all of double A is from the Angels. So that's like minimal to me. This is another kind of like Walcott. You could argue like what he did last year in A ball, sub 20% K percentage, good batting average, double digit percent walk, no homers, and all the stolen bases in the world. That's great. But then this year you have him jump that level and he goes to double A and he is struggling. Like, the stolen bases are great, but he's hitting .213. He's got absolutely no power. His strikeout rate is over 24% right now. It's hovering around 25%. And this is what I really don't like, because I don't know what to make if there's ever going to be this power output for Rada. Like, Rada might always just be like a pretty cool hitter and he's going to steal a bunch of bases. And maybe he's a quintessential leadoff type of player. But for us to really value him beyond being like Gerard Dyson or Victor Scott, like, we got to see if the power going to develop, and you hope that's going to happen. Not only is that not happening, but I'm worried about like what bad traits could be going on when you're pressing at higher levels against competition you shouldn't be. And one of those things is kind of telling here, 55% ground ball rate he had in 2022 in the Dominican Summer League. That jumped up last year to over 63%. And this year it's back at 62%. He's hitting less line drives right now and he is pulling the ball, but it doesn't look like there is a rhythm to where they're going. Like, they're not teaching barreling or whatever. I mean, he is just swinging into the ground and he's super fast and getting out of stuff. So I think it's cool. Like, I love seeing an 18-year-old do that. And hey, 19-year-old making the major leagues. Like, we're not going to put anything past the Angels. I just don't know if this is helping anything. And what's going to happen? Are you going to sit here all year because we've committed to double A, and then you're going to hit 220 and you're going to hit lots of ground balls and you're not going to readjust your game? Like, I don't know how that's good for him. So sometimes I think it's hard. This is a really tough one on, like, what do you do with his value? Because I don't see progression right now outside of him pulling the ball a tiny bit more. So I don't know how we get more excited when, you know, he's worse. He's worse right now at a level that he really probably shouldn't be. Will the team push him down? That might be telling. Go down to high A, take some. It's like the major league guys, like Jackson Holliday, you know, gets whatever, two hits or through the entire time. One of the worst players in baseball goes back down to triple A. He's like 3-for-6 yesterday. He's back to just crushing balls. Maybe you need to build back up that confidence, and maybe you want to make the adjustments that make players better at levels that players are more acclimated to. Does that make sense? I'm saying, like, it's not a great time. Like, hey, let's learn to, you know, barrel these fly balls and pull them a little bit more at double A when you're striking out 25% of the time and you're hitting dramatically worse. So I think it's just like a really bad spot for Nelson Rod. It might be a great buying opportunity, but I'm just not sold on the power. So that's why I can never get like hardcore into Rada.
Yeah, I'm not sold on the power at all, but I was going to bring up the ground ball rates if you didn't. But he, like, why would this be the type of hitting prospect that you need to protect from Tri-City when he's not going to hit any homers at double A anyway? Like, you would have sent him to high A. It's a pitcher's park and a half, but Rada wasn't going to hit any homers regardless of what level you sent him to, probably. I mean, he might have hit a couple, but yeah,
there's always that argument too of like who had. I think a lot of people say like high A sometimes has like the best pitcher. You could, Dylan Lesko with the Padres, Salas and Lesko are working together. But like, I don't know. You can also argue that you get older, more advanced off speed stuff that's happening in double A than you might at high A, that the pitching might really be a disservice to him. Like, this truly could be a major. Is Sebastian Walcott at high A big disservice? Like, you could maybe make that argument. I don't think it's a question that Rod at double A right now is a disservice to him, especially with taking the positives of last year and then kind of undercutting those and making them, if not worse, this year. Horrific ground ball rate, nothing's in the air, and bat and the strikeouts are getting worse, and he's not walking either. So, like, something is not clicking. It to me, it just seems bad for his development.
Yeah, I think a case for buying low in deeper dynasty leagues is just that the Angels, they will give him every opportunity eventually to just be their leadoff hitter who steals 30 plus bases.
And just do it forever. Like Joe Adell, like Joe Adell could run past every single base and strike out 30% of the time. And they're just like, go get him, kid. And then to his credit, like, it's clicking. Like, 4 years later, it was COVID when Joe Adell was coming up and he's now clicking. You're right. Like, they'll just keep getting out there. Get it, kid. Keep going. Like, they don't give up easy.
Like, what would they have to do to send Nolan Shanwell to double A or triple A? You know, like, I feel like he's just up and he's just going to play first base and it's going to be mediocre.
What is that team going to do, by the way, if you have Shanwell and Rada hitting like 1-2? It's like, all right, so you guys got 8 combined homers out of your 1-2 spot for the entire season in 1 year. Yeah. I mean, I believe he can hit for a little bit more power, but it's like, you do have to find that balance of the type of players that you're putting out there. It's good to get them on base, but, you know, it didn't matter who was getting on base when Trout was healthy, you know, 10 homers, 13 RBI or whatever the hell it was. Like, you got to do something different. I'm still shocked at this day, the weird stuff. The Angels have always done like weird stuff out here and complex. They had Jabari Blash doing the weird batting stance and all the players. They've always just done weird stuff and they advance these prospects for better or for worse, if they're right or wrong. You know, Shanwell's kind of a win for them, but Rada looks like an L at the minor league level.
Yeah, B. There's a lot of baseball teams that I wish were owned by different people, but the Angels are probably top 3-ish org in terms of worst owner. You know, exciting stuff for Angels fans. Let's head to a quick break. But when we come back, I have my candidate for the best prospect in baseball under 19 years old, and I'll see what Welsh thinks about that. First of all, just really excited about our partnership with So Rare. Just really cool that they're using our stuff for their player cards. And if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. Subscribing to the channel is just huge. So even if you don't watch on YouTube, if you're just someone who listens to the podcast, if you could subscribe to the RotoWire channel there, that'd be great. Finally, baseball is back. This MLB season, knock it out the park with Vivid Seats and score great tickets to the biggest games of the year. Every fastball, every home run, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team, live and in person. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, you earn rewards with every single purchase. Just buy 10 tickets, then cash in your credit toward your free 11th ticket. Talk about an easy win. And here's a pro reward tip. When buying tickets for your whole group, split the bill and make progress toward your free 11th ticket even faster. From behind the dugout to the upper deck, Vivid Seats has great tickets for all the 2024 games that matter to you. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. See vividseats.com/rewards for terms and conditions. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country. Prize Picks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. You just make more, or you just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Tonight, I like the over on Kyrie Irving at 30.5 points plus rebounds against the Clippers. And then tomorrow, I like Dante DiVincenzo over 14.5 points plus rebounds against the Sixers. So those are a couple prize picks that I like the numbers on. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Download the app today and use code ROTOPOD for a free deposit match up to $100. That's promo code ROTOPOD for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Okay, Welsh, we are back. And my question for you is Colt Emerson of the Seattle Mariners the best under 19 prospect in baseball?
I believe so. I think this is the guy. I was actually pulling up my prospect list, my top 500 list, and I believe he is, just by virtue, by the way, of where I have them slotted, yeah, he is the actual number one prospect that's under 19 years old on my physical list. But beside that point, it's also just like the skill set stuff. So we're back at A-ball from last year. He spent time in Complex where I got to see him. He went to A-ball last year, and then he comes back out and starts back over at A-ball, which will probably, I think, be over pretty soon. I think he's going to get that jump here in the very near future. I guess if you want to point out, like, on a negative side, his K percentage went up, his walk percentage went down a little bit from last year. Batting average, BABIP was a little bit high, if you wanted to pick on that type of stuff. But I think the positives are big EV guy. I think he is starting to sell out for power. And that was not something I think that was like highly projectable with Colt Emerson in the very like early stages of his game, that everyone's going to be like, it was always the Cole Young versus Colt Emerson. Like, oh yeah, there's good contact, blah, blah, blah. But he has physically gotten bigger. He's a physical monster. He explodes on the ball. You're already seeing the power start to tick up. He's got a couple homers already early on. Usually one of those signs when you start to see a player starting to adjust their game for power, strikeouts might go up just a tiny bit, and that's starting to happen just a little bit. He's pulling the ball a little bit more, and I'm very firmly in on Colt Emerson, because I think this is one of those 25-25 guys like this, and it might go in another direction. You know, maybe he steals a little bit less and he hits a whole bunch more. I wouldn't be shocked if he ended up being a 30 home run guy at the major league level. I really wouldn't, because I think it's bat. It's bat, bat, bat with Colt Emerson. So yeah, from his actual like game traits to my physical rank, he is the best under 19 year old as far as my prospect list goes. And I think it's a great call. I mean, he's a top 25 guy, I think. And he was very popular by all right reasons as a guy that could be the number one player on this list at the end of the season. Like, he will be, I will not be shocked if he is a top five on this list at the end of the season. At worst, I would be shocked if he was outside my top 25. And that's including graduations. Like, I don't foresee a whole lot of regression in his game unless, you know, his ground ball rate's pretty high right now, unless he starts beating stuff into the dirt, selling out too high of power, and then you start to lose that great offensive tool. I just don't think that's going to happen, especially as he moves up levels. I'm, you know, bullish. It's hard to not be bullish about a lot of these Mariners prospects. That's another thing. Like, Cesar Montes, we talked about. Awesome. Cole Young still plays well. Michael Arroyo might be one of the most underrated players in that Mariner system right now. It's hard to not ooh and awe over their development and the guys that they choose. You know, sometimes we get those teams where like, oh, well, if this team, you know, if the Rays like this pitcher, then there's a lot more. It's like, well, if the Mariners like this bat, there's something really there. And Colt Emerson is kind of the cream of the crop, especially built around the last thing, his two buddies, Ty Pete and Johnny Farmello, because I feel like we're starting to see the cream rise to the top as far as their traits. Like, Farmello looks like he might be a guy that is going to be built around power. Like, he might be the big full-on power bat that struggles with batting average. Ty Pete is, you know, athletically still crushing doubles. He might be the fastest of all of them, but he might be the guy that moves off the position, also struggles a little bit with the bat. Colt Emerson's not. Colt Emerson is the, I think, all tooled out player of the entire group.
Yeah, you know, I definitely think he is the best prospect 18 and under. But I think that's almost kind of damning with faint praise. I think most of the time, if I'd asked you that question, like, who's the best 18 and under hitting prospect, Like if I'd asked you that last year, I feel like I would have gotten a more exciting answer than Cole Emerson.
I think see where you're going with that. Yeah.
I think he's a really good, to me, he's almost more of like a, like I like the floor almost more than I like the ceiling with Emerson. Like I think he's,
I see that,
you know, kind of like a 270 hitter, 25 homers, like 10 to 15 steals.
It's kind of, if I hate to say his name, but it's kind of like Franco. It feels kind of Franco had the excitement, the big, you know, the juice of, oh, what could be. But then at the end of the day, like the production was still like, oh, this might just be 2020. That's actually kind of Cole Emerson. Yeah. I know what you're saying. Like this is like by default the best guy, but that doesn't mean it's comparable to previous years. I kind of see that.
And I think the reason for that is, the guys we just talked about, like Walcott and Salas, like they haven't just ripped that title. Like we're not talking about them as like, man, he's definitely going to be a top 10 prospect at the end of the year with either of those guys. And they were the top guys from that international signing class. And then obviously we, you know, we'll talk about Leo DeVries in a little bit. You know, there's obviously not like a case for any of those J15 guys over Emerson. Like Walker Jenkins is 19, Max Clark's 19. I would take Emerson probably over Clark, but like, you know, we're not considering Jenkins here. So it's just kind of, it's sort of Emerson by default. I think he is definitely pacing towards finishing this season as a top 10 prospect, I would say. Room for top five, room for maybe not quite top 10, but I think that's kind of where I sort of see
it. And that was a good point because, like, had we, you know, Jenkins would be an interesting case, but he's been out. Max Clark, I think to me, Max Clark might have been the guy if we were seeing, like, just take and run with it, if he was running with it, and we're not. Like, I think Max Clark has a lot of similar traits to the good versions of Corbin Carroll, not this current version, as far as like plate skills, the speed, how aggressive they can be on the base paths, where the future power is. You know, Max Clark is, you know, he's a machine. You know, he loves analytics. He loves the workout. He's got that workout regimen of Jared Kelnick. They wanted to get bigger and, you know, build that body up. But Max Clark is also someone that he's in, you know, if I could say it, the lab. You know, he's in there. He's looking at what is my ground ball rate? What is the bat off the ball? Am I barreling? Like, he's a guy, he's a scientist as far as it comes. A young kid who might even be obsessive about it. All of those things in it. Like, I love every bit of it. I think Max Clark is just, like, super underrated in that respect. But the production's not there. Like, you know, if he had like six early homers and, you know, a bunch of stolen bases hitting over 300, I just do think we'd be talking, oh, it's all clicking because he does all the things. He's a really smart baseball player and all of these tools are starting to click. Holy crap, it's going. It's not. And that's kind of back to your key point. Maybe it's development. Maybe it's how guys are being pushed. But all the guys that have these tools that we're excited about, none of them are going. Walcott, yeah. Salas, Clark, Jenkins is hurt, so like obviously we can't see that. But yeah, it is a very by default type of thing, which is, it's an interesting way to look at it too.
Yeah, and another thing to point out, Emerson 7 months younger than Max Clark. I think with Emerson also in Dynasty, I would say that he is a really, really good bet to hold his value for the foreseeable future. I don't, you know, he's going to be going to pretty hitter friendly park when he gets to Everett. And then I just don't really see him like showcasing any kind of major swing and miss issues as he moves up the ladder. But if Clark were to just start tapping into power, I think he would maybe have a higher ceiling for fantasy than Emerson. But like you said, not happening yet. Way too many ground balls for him. Okay. So just in terms of performance, Nazan Zanatello of the Red Sox, albeit in just 12 at bats, he just started playing at single A about a week ago. And then Jason Churio, younger brother of Jackson Churio in the Guardian system, and Ralphie Velasquez in the Guardian system. Really fun hitting prospect, TBD on whether he ends up at first base or catcher, DH, whatever. But Zanatello, Churio, and Velasquez are the only under 19 top 400 prospects with an OPS over 900. Are those guys, you know, moving up for you significantly? Were you already just really high on any of them? What do you think about that trio all having an OPS over 900 in full season ball?
I think it's too early on Nizan to go nuts. I'm probably a little bit lower than some on Nizan, and that might not be great because I've heard a lot of positive reports, especially also about like the projectable body that's already there. And if he continues, you know, hitting early on, not just after like a couple games, yeah, I think he's going to be a riser. Ralphie and Jason, yeah, absolutely. And I got to see a lot of them in Complex last year. I just love Ralphie Velasquez. Yeah. I got to meet his dad and talk with his dad. His dad was like at every single game watching him. And one of the cooler moments is I was at the Brewers minor league stadium out here. And it was the day Kyle Manzardo was rehabbing with the Guardians. So he shows up. You've got Jason Churio. Ralphie Velasquez is making his debut. There's a couple other guys. And, you know, there's a lot of fervor around it. Ralph, and that's where I have this video on my Twitter. Ralphie just absolutely demolishes a ball. I mean, he takes the show from everybody and just crushes. And I think it was an opposite field homer. Or maybe it was, you have to go watch the video. I'm not recalling it properly, but the power is super real. There's no stolen base projection. He's a big physical dude who's coming off a catcher. Good, looks like he's going to play, you know, first base, and he's got huge raw power. So for like, from that perspective of fantasy, you know, we'll have to see where the average goes. It took a lot to get him off of his ASU commitment because this is a big offensive talent. And I think the power is for real, 30, 35, like that type of stuff, that type of home run power, if he hits for average when it goes up. So that kind of leads me back to Jason Churio from a fantasy perspective. I think he's super sneaky. You're seeing the power start to develop. It looks like doubles. This is the thing. Doubles is the arguably, you know, one of the also precursors to future power. He hit 12 doubles in 39 games last year in complex ball. And then he hit, one more in a handful of games at A ball. He's already up to six, you know, half of that number in 17 games so far in A ball this season with a couple homers and an absurd 13% K rate to 25% walk rate. So what I love about Churio, he's always taking a really good path to making a lot of contact. He hits a decent amount of ground balls, which is part of the problem, but he's starting to develop and push the ball in the air a little bit more. And that's what you want to see out of Churio. You want to see him pull the ball a little bit more. You want to see him get the ball in the air a tiny bit more. And even if he's a doubles hitter, he's going to steal a lot of bases. He gets on base a ton. He's a good points league player. I think Ralphie could be flashier for the big homer power, but I wonder if, because it's not quite there. Like, I'm talking up Churio, and it's still kind of minimal as far as, like, he's still hitting a lot of ground balls, and, you know, he's not even, the fly ball rate's not even higher than it was last year. If it keeps pushing and he can be a 15-homer guy, he's probably going to steal 30 bases. He doesn't strike out and he gets on base. That could be massively valuable in fantasy. But Ralphie's the big, sexy name because he can hit 30-plus homers, hitting three or four for the Guardians into the future. So both of those guys, I think, are, like, at worst, fringy top 100 prospects, if not, you know, considerably better. I'm not sure if, you know, you haven't made that push on either one of those guys, or maybe Nizan is like the upside.
I had Zanatello at 316 coming into the year. So like way lower than both these guys. And
it's probably my relative range too, by the way, on Nizan, in the 250s.
I had Velasquez at 96 coming into the year and Churio at 151. If I were to just say, I think Jason Churio is a better dynasty prospect than Max Clark, what would be your rebuttal?
I would be like, no, but I don't have the great argument. Okay. So in watching Jason, I question that if Jason's ever going to have massive impactful power, but I don't let it go. Obviously, family ties, and you know, he is starting to hit the ball a little bit better this year. The reason your argument plays is because just the floor of Jason Churio and his plate skills. He doesn't strike out. He's going to get on base. That means he's going to score runs. He's going to steal bases. He's going to hit for a good batting average. That's tough to argue here. He's got three categories. I guess my argument is playing the upside game. I think Max Clark has similar-ish floors. I think when things settle themselves, he's not going to be a big K guy. He is going to walk. I think he's going to steal more bases than Churio. And I think he has higher home run potential. I do think he can get into the 20s. But some of that is probably I don't know, narrative based. Like, that's my preconceived notions. At the end of the day, that's not a bad argument to say, because Jason Chirio is doing elite things at low levels. That's just missing this higher barrel percentage with hard hit numbers to get the ball in the air. Like, that's the, if that were to change, Jason Chirio could be a top 10 prospect. We might be like, how did we get two Chirios to be in top 10 prospects in baseball during their prospect time? I'm just, I question if that's ever going to happen. Do you believe that?
I don't think I would have, I think I'd have Clark ahead of him, but I just think Clark's flaws are kind of Chirio's flaws, and Chirio's kind of doing a better Clark impression than Clark early this season.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
You know, I do like the Chirio. This is the first time since the DSL that Chirio's had a higher pull rate than opposite field rate, which is very important. That's part of why I had him at 150 coming into the year, is a ton of ground balls and a ton to the opposite field, which basically means that ball's never leaving the park. When Chirio hits it on the ground or to the opposite field, it's not leaving the park. So it's encouraging that he's up to 38% on the pull rate. But
and to your point, I think it's also him being more aggressive, because that was something you saw a ton in Complex last year, was he was willing to like cheat and willing to let stuff travel. And that's why you would see opposite field stuff, because he trusted his ability to make contact. So like, he wasn't going to get beat. And then now I think you're seeing a little bit more progression. You're seeing him be able to identify a little bit better. And that's like, those are the things that's like, oh, this guy could get like really high up. Like, he could, if these things can, if they stabilize, this could be a really good fantasy player. But if they progress, holy crap, if you do get more aggressive and you swing in earlier counts, and all of a sudden he ends this year with 15 homers, watch out. Like, the sky is the limit. So it's a really good thing to bring up. I think collectively people are too low on Jason Chirio. I talked about him on Prospect One like a week or two ago. I think it's important to jump on it, because the floor is becoming one of the higher floor. And, you know, I know sometimes that's tropey, but it's just like, it's not bad. It's kind of fun to sometimes have some floor prospects who you just know can like balance out. And if the outcomes don't all work out, this is going to be a regular. This is a guy I want to have on every fantasy team, because I think he balances out some of the chaos I might do, where I'm like, you know, Leo DeVries in top 20. You know, I feel like you can take a little bit more risk when you have a guy like this.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's going to be I think he's kind of in my head. He's sort of borderline top 50 right now. Certainly kind of in that 75-ish range at least.
I'm trying to see where I put him.
We'll see how many guys graduate ahead of him and that type of thing. But, he's got bloodlines. He's got a really nice command of the zone. He's going to run. He's going to add defensive value. It's nice to know that, like, he's going to be working out with his brother every offseason.
His brother sees him. A brother visits him all the time, by the way. Just to point out, you know how many times I have been at a Jason Chirio game and Jackson has shown up, even when it wasn't at the Brewers facility? Just to point out to people, I was at the Dodgers facility this spring, where it was like White Sox versus Guardians. And Jackson Chirio just showed up. Like, those guys are very, I think it's cool. They're very supportive of each other. Quick question. Who would you rather have, Jason Chirio or Nelson Rada?
Chirio.
Easy. Okay. Yeah, I think that might be the answer.
And I love Velasquez, man. It's really tough to pick holes in his game. Certainly easy to pick holes in his, you know, what he might bring to the table in terms of defensive value at the big league level for real life prospect ranking purposes.
The old DH. Yeah.
If you just, you know, I mean, he's just got, he kind of just looks like a classic cleanup hitting first baseman eventually.
Plays like it too, outside of having, low K rates. That's the great thing. It's a little bit higher than it was last year, but double digit walk rate, 22% K percentage. Complex last year was under 18%, hitting 300 across both levels. It's hard to not like Ralphie.
Yeah. Now, Yofre Rodriguez of the Brewers and Alfredo Duno of the Reds both skipped over complex ball to get to single A to start the season. And
bummer.
Leo DeVries, who we mentioned, Padres, obviously top international signee this past January. He jumped over the Dominican Summer League and complex ball, and he's at single A. Duno has performed the best of the trio. Yofri, I think, has been fine, just kind of given the contextual stuff, a lot of strikeouts, but, he's not fallen completely flat. And then obviously DeVries, I don't even know if the stats matter, but they're not good in 23 at bats with him. So where are you at on those three guys who got, among the more aggressive assignments of the players we've discussed, certainly outside of Sebastian Walker?
I don't think it matters with Leo at this point, outside of we could pay attention to, like, let's not let this be another Walcott situation where it's hyper aggressive. I would have loved to. I'm very selfish. All three of these players in my mind, like 3 months ago, were playing in the complex league that I would be watching in a couple days. Yeah. And that's what's kind of a bummer. And yeah. I do think there's a positiveness to them being able to play at this level and push up. But, hey, they've got other players. Maybe teams want to be more aggressive in their Dominican roster and bring them up, and who knows, wherever it is. I don't know if it matters a ton with DeVries, big bodied guy, hits across his body in a Wander Franco like way to bring him up again. There was some, I remember someone was telling me some comps like that, and I was like, okay. And then physically I had to see him in spring, and then you get to see him now. Like you're seeing some of it. You see some of the talent that wants to shine through. But I mean, he has been stateside for 6 weeks. I mean, he came partway through camp out here in Arizona. I got to see him twice, and he was playing in games immediately. So it's a really aggressive assignment, but he's walking a bunch. He's also striking out a bunch. I try not to read too much into it. I love Duno. Duno's a cool guy. I got to see him run an entire set, this crazy BP session on the back of the Reds one day. And he's a huge physical human being who is performing really well. They're still playing him at catcher. He was going back and forth. He was playing with like Blake Dunn in that session. So I think there's a lot to be optimistic, but again, this is like a catcher, first baseman, all power type of player. And Yofri, might be one of the most complete tooled players here. But again, aggressive assignment, he's got an over 35% K percentage. Like you were saying, the performance, it's not great at this point, but it's nothing that we would pick crazy apart. I love that he's not hitting a bunch of ground balls. I love his swing, and I love that he's already putting up a bunch of counting stats. None of the performances worry me. None of them are shining to levels that I think deserve big, crazy rank boosts or anything like that. But all of these guys should be like on radars, as if anybody was worried, if someone was looking at Yofri and going, oh man, that's a big K rate, I would be a buyer. Leo DeVries, same thing. Like, oh, hitting awful in A ball. Like, these are aggressive assignments, bad time of the year. There's another thing to throw into a lot of these players. But I think they're all really good targets. I'm simplistically saying this, not telling you the rank, but like they're all top 150 guys, if not 100, especially if you are playing for the future. I know there's always the proximity battle with all these guys. These guys are all very far away, very far away. But from a talent perspective and age perspective, they're easy top 150 prospects. All three of them varying, by the way, on my personal ranks. They're not all extremely close, but they're in that range.
How athletic do you think DeVries is?
I don't think he's as athletic as it feels. He's actually I was surprised at how big he was. When I saw Ethan Salas, when I got to see him, when he came stateside, he was a little bit smaller than he is now. And the body differences between DeVries and him stood out to me, because DeVries looked like a guy that was 2 years older than even at this time at Ethan Salas. He's a little bit thicker of a guy, got a little bit of a thicker lower half, which doesn't make me feel like this is some wiry, springy, big athletic guy. He doesn't feel Julio like to me. If I could give you an athletic comp, it doesn't feel like that. He's already kind of a big guy. I think he's going to get a bit bigger. Like, almost Austin, like I wouldn't be surprised if he got to be Austin Riley size. Maybe I'm being a little bit dramatic about it or something like that, but maybe it's a little bit smaller, but it's not Manny Machado. If you were looking at their own players, I think he sits closer to Manny Machado than he does a Bogarts or a Tatis. That's my
take. Interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, do you think, is he even like a 20 steal guy at maturity, or is it just going to have to be the bat that kind of carries the
day? No, I don't, at this day and age, I'm not going to cross anybody off of stealing bases. Like what athleticism might lack the ability to time pitchers and be able to, you know, be get that good leadoff can make up for athleticism and stuff like that. I don't foresee him being a dramatically big stolen base guy. He's got one stolen base through his first six games. I wouldn't be surprised if that pace was kind of similar-ish. But yeah, I don't think it's going to be Jofre would be, if I had to pick who's going to steal more bases between the series, pretty easy. It would be Jofre.
Yeah, I'm holding steady with Jofre. I think his numbers at the end of the season are going to look just fine. And I'm interested to see where this goes with Duno, because you know he's got just crazy power potential, and I almost wouldn't mind if he moved off a catcher.
We would love it. First base, right? Give me a first base Alfredo Duno. Why wouldn't you love that?
Yeah, I mean it is also kind of fun to just dream on. You know, 130 games of him in Great American as a catcher eligible guy, you know, could be maybe one of the leaders among catchers in home runs if he were to stay at the position. But he is massive, and I was low on him right after that international signing day, just because like a very physically maxed out catcher is the exact opposite type of prospect I want to invest in.
He does
teen market
physically look maxed out, like. To the point where it's like, buddy, you can't max anymore. Like you got to take some off. That is the physical place that he is in. He is, James, you know, I'm a big human being. And I stood next to him and I was like, okie doke. Big head. I mean, he is like, I was intimidated at the physical side. Because what do they list him at? They list him, Fangraphs got to list him at 6'2", 210. No. I would say closer to 6'4". In cleats, he was a little bit taller than me, and I'm like 6'3" and 3/4" or whatever. So I'm right about there. And he is, I would at best say 235.
Sure.
He's not 210. So he's a big dude. But that doesn't, also coming back to it, like he's a big dude that like has really good barreling skills. Like, and he's got huge raw power, and he's not striking out aggressively like these other two guys are right now. So it's like really good positive signs. And he's got the least juice of any of these players between these three players, the most obtainable, if not picking up or getting in like a trade.
Yep, definitely. Okay. So Welsh, you've been around the Arizona Complex League for a long time. You know, this is where players like CJ Abrams and Corbin Carroll generated their first major pro buzz. But with the changing schedule of the rookie leagues, like what does this mean? Is single A kind of almost closer to what the old AZL used to be than the current ACL? You know, is it like a half step up from the old rookie leagues single A? Like how do we kind of, and you already mentioned a lot of guys you were looking forward to seeing in the ACL just skipped it. And based on the new schedule, you know, who knows, you aren't even going to see the high school guys from this draft playing in the
conference. Yeah, it's pretty complicated. I think one thing that has changed all of this from Complex to Arizona Fall League is, in a good way, of course, is players getting the union treatment and, you know, and that deal. They are now paid year round. And like in the Arizona Fall League, where you didn't see some players or teams didn't even care to send some players, is because these teams now are running more camps. And they also don't care, like, oh, we don't need to throw this guy over here because we can throw him over here because they're already paying for it. And multiple teams, a lot of camps. So what I'm saying is I think that with that, you're seeing development being pushed a little bit harder. So to what you're saying is, yeah, I kind of do think that A-ball is now the closer representation of Complex. It's not 100%, because what was so uniquely cool about Complex was like you would get these international guys that are just coming over stateside, and then you would get high school players with all their development, and then they're mixed together. And that's why that 1 year you're talking about, it was incredible. Luis Matos, Marco Luciano, Corbin Carroll, CJ Abrams, and there are plenty more. Bobby Witt Jr. was there. I mean, what a mixture of guys that were out there. Now teams are in that investment, I think, are pushing those high school guys to this. So then now let's come back. They've moved it up a month. And I think this plays into that role. You're now going to have the end of the league. Literally, the league ends 2 weeks before the draft is over. So you're not going to really get, if maybe a couple games, you're not going to get these high school guys playing this entire time. What you will get is they're now going to have these like tricky league type of things that are going to happen in the backfields, these unmarked scheduled games that these guys are going to play in the backfields, working, uncontrolled roster amounts. They don't have to control their roster so they can put more players there. Then they'll push them up to like A ball. And then it just, it's moving the timeline. So these guys really never have to come and play complex ball. Same thing with international players. And it's just going to be probably low leveled Dominican Summer League guys, or guys that got very little Dominican Summer League work the previous year internationally. And then a handful of random players, like Walker Martin, I believe, is going to be one of them. And that's a, you know, high school guy that didn't really play in complex at all last year, though he traveled with the team. I talked to Bryce Eldridge one day. I'm like, where's Walker Martin? He's like, he's here. He never did anything. And from probably a health perspective, whatever, they decide they want to push him here. And then you're going to get random callbacks. So in kind of answering your question, I think this is the new restructuring. I think complex ball is going to be for rehab assignments, injured previous year players and that were like draftees, and international. It's going to be heavy international. Any advancement on players, I really don't expect to see them here. So that's why Yofri would be the CJ Abrams of complex ball this year, but we won't, because he went to he got moved up. So it's going to be trickier. But also, I do have a feeling the stars might shine even a little bit brighter in complex, because you know, it's not a handful of like every team is going to have three or four of these like really great looking players. Like you really might just see like one guy absolutely dominate. So those stars might shine a little bit brighter and quicker. But yeah, it's going to end. And I don't expect to get a lot of the draft guys, which stinks for me. But that's why I will be going to those non-counted tricky league games. It'll literally be just like complex ball, but you just won't know what's going on and they won't track the stats. And you guys will have less information on your high school drafted players, which is really going to stink for a lot of us.
Yeah. You know, I mean, to be fair, a lot of the high school guys like last year didn't even, or like they maybe got in like three complex league games and then shut it down. And some of the guys didn't even play at all. And some of them went to single A like Walker Jenkins and played well. So it'll still probably be kind of, you know, we still probably won't see a ton of the guys get sent to single A. The Walker Martin thing is really weird to me, because, you know, like I know he played in Colorado and wasn't facing great competition and was a two sport guy. But he's, you know, he's almost 20, isn't he? Like it's weird that they didn't think he was ready for single A.
Yeah, it might have been an injury too. I don't know the extent of it. I just know that he hasn't played his setup. Yeah, I'm looking right now. Yeah, he just turned 20 like 2 months ago. So he's going to be one of those guys. But also that might be the thing. That's what we don't know. And I feel like there's like more uncertainties, because what we used to know was like, they're just going to throw a bunch of guys at rookie ball, a bunch of different talented players, get their eyes on it. And then sometimes rookie ball might be the teller. Where do we need to push these players? And that's now happening at earlier levels in extended spring training. Maybe there's an injury. Maybe there's something they want to see. Sometimes, you know, remember having the facilities here, it's, you have more coaching and you might have more of that happening at this level. I mean, sometimes you get, like Nelson Cruz, by the way, just, this is a Dodger thing. Nelson Cruz and Chris Archer are both developmental coaches in the Dodger system, and they're here. They're here locally. I stood next to them as they're coaching up. You know, Yohindri Vargas is going to have Nelson Cruz as like a coach in complex ball. That's not something that you necessarily get at like A or high A, and some players might need that, and they might want to have more personal control over it. That, again, speculation on, sometimes you get a little bit extra at a complex level, and there might be some of those type of reasons.
So it's not going to be as good as 2019.
I don't anticipate it will be.
Which prospects are you most excited to see in the ACL?
Well, Rainer Arce might have broke his arm or something like a month ago, or had some type of injury. So I think he's going to miss some time. That's obviously one. Yohindri Vargas and Felon Selston are the tippy top of the players. Felon Selston specifically, because I got to see a decent amount of him in spring training. And he was always, by the way, him and Lazaro are like best buddies. Like they're always together. Him, Lazaro, and Michael Arroyo. And he got bigger. He physically looks a lot more impressive than some of the early looks. So I'm very excited to see what he pulls off in this kind of competitive landscape. We talked about Walker Martin. Welbin Francisco with the Guardians is another one of those. Guardians have put out some really, really good complex level teams. I mean, guys that you're seeing, Ramirez Jr.'s, you know, one of those hot bats. He was out here in complex. So him. And then some of them are just other questions. Like I know you would put on here, like Paulino, Santana, do the Rangers push early? Robert Calas with the Rockies. You know, those are two players. I'm not 100% sure. I believe Calas we're going to see out here because he was in Dominican Summer League. But, you know, will we see any of these international players? Those are a handful. But I would say Yohindri, Vargas, and Felton Celston, those are the tippy top, like, stars of players that we are going to see out here. But those are a few of the others I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. That's a great, great list of guys. Yeah, I think with Vargas, like Joendry Vargas of the Dodgers, obviously was great in the DSL. And then you mentioned Celestin, just big ticket, tons of pedigree, international free agent we haven't seen yet. I think kind of the way I'm looking at it is those guys should kind of knock this assignment out of the park.
They should.
Right? Like, Celestin, the big thing with it, like everyone, I had people sort of asking, well, like Celestin is, he's put on all this good weight and stuff. Like, is he moving up? But like the thing with Celestin was, it was never about the power or the speed or anything like that. It was just like, how much can he hit? And you don't really find that out till he gets into games. So, you know, I think Celestin is the type of guy where he could be a top 25 prospect at the end of the season or outside the top 150. And it just kind of depends how he does in complex ball.
I agree with that. He looks similar-ish to Noelvi Marte when Noelvi was early on, like hanging around the complex. By the way, Noelvi's here. He's been playing on the backfields. They're already doing these, again, it's kind of like tricky, non-scheduled games against the teams before it goes to complex. And he's out here playing. He probably is going to play out here a little bit. But he reminds me of the same physical body type, a little bit bigger now, that Noelvi does. And then it kind of back of my head is like, what direction does that go? You know, like where, like how does that bat play? Does he run aggressively out there? Like, I agree with you. Like there is a lot of upside for him to go in a really high aggressive direction. And he's one of my first main targets. I actually believe weirdly they're starting up on Saturday, which is stupid, by the way. My daughter's got a dance thing, so I don't think I'll be able to see it. So thanks, guys. But Monday, I'm going to try to get out, and I will probably target where the Mariners are. Felton is like my main target to see early on, and then I'll kind of go down the list. Because to your point, I think he has the most to gain. And I don't know if he has the most to lose. I mean, I guess in theory, he has the most to lose kind of with it. But he has enough to lose and the most to gain from prospect pedigree as far as what rank goes.
Yeah, definitely. And with Paulino Santana, I mentioned in there, I think he will spend about half the year in the DSL and half the year in complex ball.
Like Walcott, take the Walcott treatment. Yeah.
And I'm excited for Santana. I think he kind of checks a lot of the boxes of just, he's got the tools, he's got the size, he's got the, reportedly impressive in-game performance. But we will see.
Me too. I really want to see him because I'm not as high as everybody else is on him. So I would love if they were aggressive. I want to add one more. I completely forgot. I meant Ramon Ramirez with the Royals. He's a super interesting kid because I believe he's still hanging because he was just hanging out in the rookie section of complex ball out here. And I believe it should be pro debut out here. Royals have also had traditionally some really interesting clubs that they put out in complex ball. And from last year in Instructs to spring training here, you're already seeing the body kind of start to develop and look, you know, sometimes these guys will walk in looking like SpongeBob SquarePants and then they're going to turn into the lobster. That's a little bit where Ramon is going. So I'm excited to see like the in-game play, the contact that he makes. And that might be one that's should be on a lot more radars as well.
Yeah. He is a catcher, but he had a huge DSL season last year. Yeah. Okay. Let's look at the Florida Complex League here. I think it's a lessened Arizona Complex League than, you know, the Halcyon days of 2019, but
yeah,
it's still better than the Florida Complex
League. Yeah.
you know, it's like you hope Jose Perdomo's there eventually, like with Paulino Santana. You know, I don't know. Maybe Perdomo even opens there. I don't know. Obviously, Atlanta.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Probably the second most famous guy from that class behind DeVries. And then, you know, Yoelin Cespedes of the Red Sox is a guy that I think a lot of people are excited to see. I think Starlin Cabba of the Phillies could be a guy that, like, Baseball America is really hyping up in, like, a couple months just because of how sick his glove is at shortstop. If he hits in complex ball, I'm sure he'll be prominently featured by the real life publications. Who else kind of stands out to you that might be in the Florida Complex League, or you can add anything to those guys if you want?
Yeah, I'm with you on all those. Perdomo would be super fascinating. It's who's our guy with the Braves last year? I'm completely forgetting his name. It's out of my brain. You got it.
Guanipa?
Guanipa. Yeah, Luis Guanipa. Guanipa was kind of a failure, like, especially with the hype that was going on with it. So I wonder in what direction would a team like the Braves, would they, you know, who could tip them? I don't know if they go with hitting prospects that they push higher than pitching, but like, would they be willing to maybe push that up? Especially because, you know, Perdomo's big selling card was the advanced bat. Like, he was the guy of all this class. It was like the more mature bat of anybody else. That one really intrigues me, and that would be one to watch. There's something to add to it.
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Your face looked like I was ready for you to jump in. So the only other two, Emmanuel Bonilla would be one I'm looking for, and Braylor Guerrero with the Rays. Braylor Guerrero was someone I was like really, really intrigued with in the previous international class. And I want to see what he does on stateside ball. So that's something I'm really looking forward to. I'm going to send my boy, Tim Kanak, who's been doing Prospect One with me, who lives in Florida, out to try to get some of that Braylor video. Cause he is one, I think, that post hype world of like, you know, when the J2s happen, everyone's like, oh my God, there's 15 guys everyone has to get. And then at the end of the day, there's like two. And then there's these guys that kind of, you know, loom around and we're waiting to see, will they be someone? Braylor, I feel like, is a guy that could be. So I'm very excited to see Braylor, but I think Cabba and Cespedes are like the two blatant obvious ones. But to your point, Cabba and Cespedes are definitely not Felton and Vargas. So it is like, it's a tier drop down.
Should have mentioned Jeter Martinez potentially for the ACL. Yes. In terms of pitcher worth getting eyes on. I'm sure you'll hopefully see him and maybe get some behind
the plate. I could never find him in spring. I was always looking for him, and he kind of stands out. And like, you'll get these guys. It's very interesting how the guys all come out when they're doing their workouts. Like, they go through like the parking lot. Sometimes they just walk out on the concourse where everybody is. I was always looking for Jeter Martinez, and I could never find him. So I am ecstatic and excited to be able to watch him pitch in a game, and I'd love to see it up against like a Dodgers team with like some competition. So yeah, that is a great one. They're probably the best complex league pitcher that is out there right now.
Yeah, and I mean that the Dodgers team, inevitably there will be a couple guys we're not even talking about that'll just be awesome on that team. How's your access with the Dodgers out there, like
into games?
Like, do they let you kind of like do what you want in terms of hang around the
pretty much? Yeah. That's a good thing that you're bringing up, because that's not all the same. Like, not all places kind of let you roam. Dodgers for the most part are a pretty roam free one. It's actually interesting, cause you have to come in one spot usually, and you go through the White Sox. Last year, it was very weird. No one on the Dodgers side could come in. So when visiting teams were playing the Dodgers, they had to come in the White Sox side and walk, like, I'm not even kidding you, like a quarter of a mile. They would have to walk down this road, like all the way and over a bridge and stuff to get over to the Dodgers. But to actually answer your question, great access. You can get right up to the fence. You can get to the players, talk with them. It's really good. Not all of them, you know, Diamondbacks have gotten a lot tougher. Their access isn't good. Guardians is almost non-existent. Dodgers are on the higher end of access, like the Mariners and the Padres and stuff.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap it up with the Dominican Summer League. How about we just say, like, the guy I'm most excited to see how he does is Dewell Joseph of the Mariners. He's the guy that Juicy Jensen was pumping up the most to me in terms of the guys other than sort of big three. I would say the big three are kind of DeVries, Perdomo, and Paulino Santana. And then I guess DeWell Joseph would be fourth. But I'm basically kind of riding with Juicy on that one, because I
Alex.
Do not pretend to have done any kind of scouting work on the guys that have yet to play the Dominican Summer League or anything like that. But is there, you have any thoughts on Joseph or anyone that you're specifically eager to sort of see how they perform in the DSL?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think Joseph is like that. That's the tippy top. Again, talking about like, oh, if the Mariners are invested in a guy, that's a guy that you want to be excited about. He's got really big power. I think all the names, take Perdomo or Paulino, and that would be it. A guy that you didn't mention, I really want to see Fernando Cruz, who the Cubs took, because I think it was Alex that I did an episode with that. I think I talked to him off air, and he might have said it on your international preview. Was the so it stood out in the back of my mind that Fernando Cruz was kind of a showcase player, and that stood out. So I think I was on your show, confused all the shows and the conversations, and that stood out to me as something to watch, because I think Fernando Cruz, from a toolset standpoint, this is another one of those guys. It feels very Christian Hernandez, but you could argue Christian Hernandez was a great showcase player.
Right.
And that's the same thing, like a guy in a stabilized setting that can, you know, barrel the ball, absolutely, you know, pull it, launch it. Like they know the things. It's like an NFL prospect going to their hometown and doing a session with their quarterback and everything like that. Like, is Fernando Cruz going to be another Christian Hernandez? Is this another setup of a player that is simply going to just be a showcase player, or are the tools going to fly? Because dude has huge power. Dude can run. Could he be what we wanted out of Christian Hernandez? So all those guys, Adolfo Sanchez, a little bit older, advanced. Yes. DeWell Joseph. Yes. Paulino, all of them. But Fernando Cruz, I feel like I really want to pay attention to, because I feel like he could flush out into obscurity. He could just be gone. We could not worry about him if there's massive struggles again. And oh yeah, this maybe is more showcase than anything else, but all the names you said, and that would be my addition.
Yeah. And I will be, last year I had a breakout rookie level hitters article where I was basically, you know, 'cause I think the way you should approach it with the, you know, adding rookie level hitters in dynasty leagues, you obviously want to see the production, and then you want to sort of see like, okay, like what are the scouting reports say about this guy's speed, or this guy's raw power, in terms of like, is this coming? Is this something that you can actually do? Like, are the stats lying to us? So I try to like kind of incorporate all that, and it's just kind of like a list so people can kind of track the performers. You really don't know with the DSL until these guys get into games, for the most part. Like
crazy inflated numbers and stuff. You have wild stolen base numbers. Right. And yeah, DSL is very hard to translate over. I remember you and I having, I just thought about him the other day because I was like clicking on his name, but Christian Betancourt was a guy that I remember us talking about, and he was just like destroying. Betancourt, right? The Rockies kid catcher. Am I saying his?
I think it
you
was...
know who I'm talking about. Well, now I'm gonna
yeah, go. It was
because Christian Betancourt is the Rays guy. It is. Yeah. I'm gonna give it to you right now, because now we can't leave without it being. Oh, I'm sorry, Bryant Betancourt. That he was a 20-year-old though. That was like demolishing in complex ball, and he was a guy that, you know, for everybody that, or maybe he was like high 19 years old, but he was one of those guys that would show up on a lot of algorithms, people that run algorithms off of like WRC plus and stuff like that. And he was shining and looking right here. Yeah, here it was 2022, 355 with 11 homers and more walks than strikeouts. And he did that. I guess it was like close to around a 19-year-old. And you and I having that conversation, what does that translate to? He was older for the level, absolutely demolished. Came over and stunk, and he's kind of stunk since. He had 244 in Cal League last year. He's hitting 226 this year, and he was like, everyone's like, hey, watch out, Bryant Betancourt with the Rockies. He, you know, all the systems say he's going to be great, and he was awful. He's been awful. So that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I've got a pretty strict kind of no, like, if I'm going to be impressed by what you did in the DSL, you better be 17 or 16. Like I just don't even really care what anyone does in the DSL if they're over 17, because there's so many false positives in that league anyway for like the age appropriate guys. Just kind of based on just how I've been doing this like for over a decade, I really struggle to think of a guy that performed well in the DSL as like a 18 or 19 year old and then actually went on to be something. It doesn't really happen.
The age to level stuff, because I think he was like close to 19 at that time when it was getting near. But I think of like Gilberto Hernandez, who I think, you know, he was with the Rangers and he was in the Dominican Summer League before that. And he was like 20 years old, if I'm remembering correctly, with the Rangers in complex ball. And he put up huge hard hit numbers and then we were oohing and aahing. And it's just like, that was age to level. You know, 20 years old in complex ball is probably similar to like oohing and aahing at an almost 19 year old in Dominican Summer League. But the main point of that was he's a version that I think of when I think of like reading too much into those numbers, and that did not translate over. Or did Yasser Mercedes, for that matter?
Yes.
Makes me sad.
Well, Welsh, this has been great. Glad we got to catch up. Why don't you let the listeners know where they can find more of your work?
Yep, you can check out my top 500 prospect list and my dynasty list over on my Patreon, inthisleague.com. That'll take you on over there. We do prospect stuff, all of my normal stuff. You also can check out all of my other work over on Fantasy Pros. I have a daily show I do on there Monday through Friday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern, leading off. I've been doing some prospect stuff on there as well. I got one coming out tomorrow as we're recording this, the prospects to stash. We do some videos. I'm doing all the baseball stuff there, but I am still doing In This League and Prospect One, who Tim Kanak, Fantasy Ace Ball, has been joining me doing those shows. We've got a new structure to Prospect One. So Prospect One show, inthisleague.com for the Patreon, and check me out over in Fantasy Pros or on Twitter at isitthewelsh just to find the stuff.
Very good. That is Chris Welsh. This has been brought to you by Prize Picks. Again, use the promo code ROTOPOD for 100% deposit match, and I'll catch you next week. All right, man.
Sweet, brother. Well, thanks for having me. That was great. It was fun.